warning signs of satanic behavior may be apparent, such as a sudden, bitterly antagonistic attitude towards family and religion, a drastic decline in academic performance, a reclusive behavior pattern, and listening exclusively to heavy metal rock music, almost to the point of addiction. When one or more of these warning signs are evident, you should look further for ritual items such as a pentagram or other satanic symbols, black or red robes, a decorative dagger or knife, a chalice or goblet, black candles, a personal diary with a black cover, which is called a book of shadows, and copies of publications, such as the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Rituals, and possibly a small makeshift altar. If you discover items such as these, experts advise you contact your local law enforcement agency at once.
Do you ever fantasize about being killed? Do you ever wonder about all the different ways of dying? You know, violently. I wonder, like, what would be the most horrible way to die?
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy.
The following program may contain mature subject matter. Discretion is advised.
And for gosh sake, watch your language.
The devil is an evil, sneaky fellow who sometimes likes to go incognito among the living to manipulate people and stir up some sin. Or maybe just tempt some mortals and secure a few more souls for himself. Alternatively, maybe he has simply sent an agent of some sort to do his dirty work for him. Either way, there's a demon hiding among the living, and this time, he may be tricking you into listening to this insidious podcast? From the deepest and most fiery pits of hell known as the trash bag facility of Studio Zero, do not adjust your set, or you'll miss the exorcism with a twist. Welcome back, lurkers and jerkers, to What Lurks Behind Podcast Zero. And I am your host, Postmortem Paul. And this week, it's a good one. This week we're talking about a movie that has garnered quite a solid reputation, actually. One that has impressed both paid critics, we don't really care for them, but, you know, they're there, and horror audiences. Now that's the opinions we usually care about, sometimes. And we're also talking about a movie that is both what you expect and what you don't expect, if that makes any sense. Anyways, without burying the lead anymore, this week's featured review is on the 2023 film festival hit that is now streaming on Shudder, Late Night with the Devil. But first, quickly. So, recording this April 29th, the morning of April 28th, I watched another Shudder flick, actually, Shudder exclusive, from 2024, called Infested. Also, apparently, its French title is Vermines, I think. Vermines, whatever. I'm French, I can't speak it. Who knew? But, no. So, what did I think after I watched Infested? Basically, I loved it. I'll be honest, I loved it. I also walked away from it laughing my ass off. And not because it's a funny film. I don't want to say it takes itself too seriously, because there are a few moments that are definitely laugh-worthy. But the thing is that in my lifetime, I have come across many arachnophobes. Yes. People with that fear of the eight-legged little creatures that roam this earth with us. Of course, I laugh about it, and probably if I moved to, say, somewhere like Australia, I'd probably be a big baby like everybody else, because I've seen the size of those spiders. But the thing is that people who are afraid of spiders, I like picking on them. In a loving way, of course, but I just think it's funny, because we are these big, enormous humans, and we're usually afraid of these tiny little, like, 2-centimeter yellow spiders. It's like, okay, like I said, move to Australia and then tell me you have a fear of spiders. I would understand that. But the thing is when I watched this movie, I had so many people going through my head that I was like, yeah, they wouldn't survive this. They wouldn't survive this. I mean, the movie is basically, it's a French version of Arachnophobia, but minus the campy humor. And also, if you amp the intensity up to 10, you pretty much have this movie. Did it freak me out? No. There's something with me. I have a disconnect when it comes with movies, I guess. I don't know. I think it's also because, like, I'm watching this movie, and I can tell the spiders are CGI. So I know nobody got hurt. I know none of these actors actually got bitten. None of these actors actually died. Did they have to deal with real spiders? They may have. I don't know. I didn't look into the behind the scenes of this movie because I was focusing way too much on this week's review. But yeah, like, I'll be honest. The way I took Infested was, I took it in two halves. The first half of the movie is amazing. It's excellent. Yes, stupid humans. But as I've said in the past, you don't have horror movies without stupid humans. Humans doing stupid things. It's going to happen. So I'm watching the first half of the movie and I'm going, yeah, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're definitely dead. You're definitely dead. You see things coming. But it's still, the build-up with the spiders and whatnot was actually done really well. The problem I had with the second half is that it sort of goes a little too far and really asks you to suspend a lot more disbelief. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy the second half of the movie. I did. There were quite a few good moments in it. But the first half of the film, I'd say the first 50, maybe even first hour, like 50 minutes to an hour of the movie, I would say was the better part of the film. Again, not saying the second half wasn't good. It was. It's just, I felt there was a bit of a drop off in the quality. But aside from that, the movie was solid. Like, I definitely enjoyed it. I probably won't talk about this one in full depth. I feel people should watch this one. Even if you are said person who is an arachnophobe, still watch this movie. Yeah, you probably won't sleep for a couple weeks. But if you also go into it approaching it that, look, it's just a movie, the actors walked away just fine, nobody was hurt, and all that good stuff. I mean, you can watch the movie and be like, all right, yeah, that was, you know, it was fun. It's like Eight-Legged Freaks, right? Like, these kinds of movies, Arachnophobia even, that, like, they take the fear of spiders and they go one step further, and it's like, okay. And again, maybe I'm just that person who it doesn't affect me, but while I was watching the movie, I didn't feel itchy. I didn't feel the need to check the corners of my room. I didn't worry about sticking my hand in the potato chip bag and, ooh, I might get bit. Like, my brain didn't work that way watching this movie. I think I spent more of the movie just enjoying the atmosphere, the score, which is phenomenal. That is definitely a highlight of the movie, is the score. Really helps to build the tension. That is one thing they did very well with this, was the music. But yeah, like, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. Not that there's a whole lot to spoil, because it's spiders infesting an apartment complex, and will the people get out alive or not? That's basically your story premise, like the premise of your story. So I'm not spoiling a whole lot. I do say watch it, though. I enjoyed it. Did I enjoy it as much as Late Night with the Devil? Well, we'll find out. Because that's honestly about it for this opening segment. Like I did say last week, I do want to kind of shorten down the episodes. And Late Night with the Devil, I have a lot to talk about with that one. So doing the research and the rewatches and everything for Late Night with the Devil was an absolute joy. So I do want to get into that as soon as possible. I mean, unless you want me to talk about, I don't know, the Detroit Tigers, the Detroit Red Wings. And you're like, the Red Wings, they're out of the playoffs. Yeah, they never made the playoffs, I know, but damn, it was an exciting season. The Chicago Bears. Oh, I know. You're like, I didn't come to this podcast to hear you talk about sports. But, you know, the Bears, I mean, NFL draft, it just took place next door to us in Detroit, Michigan. Set all-time record for attendance. Blah, blah, blah. I know. But come on, the Chicago Bears had a good draft. I'll stop. I really will stop. But also for the fact that I don't want to get overly excited about the Chicago Bears because I know their reputation as well. Yes, let's draft a quarterback in the first round. And then he sucks. And we ship him off. And 3 years later, we try it all over again. And yeah. You don't care, I know. So we'll move on to this week's trailer timeout for a movie where we get spooky. It's kind of this movie. I don't want to go too deep into it because, like I said, I have a lot to talk about. But this movie. Okay, let's just do the trailer timeout. And when we return, we will talk about Late Night with the Devil. Back in a splat, kids.
On Halloween night, 1977, America gathered around for a live TV event that shocked the nation. What happened was real. What you are about to see is the recently discovered master tape of what went to air that night.
Ladies and gentlemen, now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Devil.
Late Night with the Devil.
All right, welcome back, everyone. After that short but sweet trailer for Late Night with the Devil. God, I love the title of this movie. Just rolls off the tongue. Late Night with the Devil. It's like, what lurks behind? No, I'm kidding. Late Night with the Devil is such an awesome title, though. It's also the first Shudder exclusive flick that I'm reviewing since I did Mad God in 2022. Mad God, what a great movie. This is a great movie. The movie that this surpassed in terms of opening weekends on Shudder is an excellent movie. I'll talk more about that in a minute or two. But yeah, I'll just get right into talking about Late Night with the Devil. Had multiple premiere dates because it was a film festival flick, right? So it was doing the film circuit, like the festival circuit, for quite some time. But the very, 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 very first premiere, first showing on a screen was at the South by Southwest Festival in the United States on March 10th, 2023. Afterwards, the film was shown at multiple film festivals, like I said, some which included the Fantasia Film Festival in Montreal, or the After Dark Film Festival in Toronto, and I believe it had UK dates. It got shown around for quite some time, and then about a year later, it received a limited theatrical release in North America, primarily in the United States. It was more wide release over there in Canada. Here, it was very limited, but it March 22nd, 2024, it did hit theaters to the local audiences. And then 1 month after that, April 19th, 2024, Late Night with the Devil debuted on the Shudder streaming app, which this is worthy to note. According to Shudder, this movie broke the record for their biggest opening weekend ever on the streaming app. Streaming service, whatever. I know you can watch it through, like, the internet, smart TV, smartphones, you know, whatever. But this was the most watched for Shudder and AMC Plus, I believe, as well. The movie it surpassed, well, two, actually. But the one that it topped was When Evil Lurks, which is a phenomenal movie. And this beat that one for most watched. And also VHS 99, which was another... VHS 99 was solid. I didn't mind it. But When Evil Lurks... Granted, I wasn't podcasting at the time that one came out, but had I been actively podcasting, I probably would have talked about that one. That was actually my favorite movie for the year 2023, was When Evil Lurks. It was... It's a banger, we'll call it that. But yeah, so Late Night with the Devil currently is the reigning king on Shudder for being the most streamed movie in its opening weekend on the app. Pretty fucking cool. So let's move on to the people behind the scenes, the people who brought this joyous little wonder to us. Written and directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns. They are a writing, editing, and directing duo of brothers. Haven't done a lot yet, but they have done some work. Two films that they were quite well noted for, 100 Bloody Acres and Scare Campaign. But aside from that, they haven't done a whole lot, but this movie will definitely help boost their reputation. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what's next from these two. Especially if they work together, they seem like they work well together, so. Producers? Shit, there was like six or seven of them or something like that. Produced by Matt Govani, or Govoni. I think I said it right the first time, but Roy Lee, John Malloy, Adam White, Stephen Schneider, and Derek Doushy. I didn't go into what each and every one of them had done prior to this. That would have taken up a good chunk of this episode, and there's someone that I really need to focus on for this episode, so... Those were your producers. Cinematography was done by Matthew Temple. He's done a lot of Steadicam work, actually, on movies like Pacific Rim, 100 Bloody Acres, and The Wolverine. But his primary focus was in TV. He's done a lot of TV work. And the music was composed by Glenn Richards. And he has worked with the Cairns brothers on their other films, 100 Bloody Acres and Scare Campaign as well. But it's the cast. We have to focus on the cast because it's the cast that really bring this whole thing to life. And I'm not going to lie. The lead actor I have quite a bit to talk about. So this is going to take a little bit longer than normal, because normally I just give you the actors, tell you what they've been in, say yay or nay, and then we move on. Not in this case, because David Dastmalchian is a gem. He is absolutely worth talking about, and I finally get the chance to fully talk about him in this episode, so I'm going to. Because he plays Jack Delroy. He is our talk show host. He's our late night talk show host, the host of Night Owls. Night Owls with Jack Delroy. Yes, that is David Dastmalchian. And it's weird to think that I've been following this man for almost his whole career, because his first film role was as the paranoid schizophrenic that Harvey Dent captures to try and get info about the Joker. He was in The Dark Knight in 2008 with Christian Bale and Heath Ledger as probably one of the most memorable live-action Jokers. But David got his start there. That was his first feature role. Nice movie to start in. Even though his role, like, he literally was on the screen for, what, 3 minutes tops? And barely said a damn word? But yeah, since then he's had many, many, many supporting roles. Small roles, big roles, but everything from Ray Donovan to Ant-Man. 12 Monkeys, the TV series, The Belko Experiment, Gotham. Yeah, I think he was in 2 episodes of Gotham. Blade Runner 2049, he played Coco. He was in Bird Box, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, Batman The Long Halloween, the double animated flick that they later on made into one big flick as well. But he voiced Calendar Man. He was in James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. He was Polka Dot Man in that. Absolutely hilarious. He was in the first part of Dune. It came out a few years back. He was in Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is another phenomenal movie. He was in Oppenheimer. I haven't seen that yet. I know. Blasphemy. Everyone has seen Oppenheimer. Not me. Not yet. I'll get to it eventually. I haven't watched it yet. I know. And it was funny because so many people that kept seeing it were like, how have you not seen it yet? I'm not a theater guy. Like, and for reasons that I wish weren't there. But I mean, I have a hard time with movie theaters. So I'm that guy who watches a lot of movies at home, digitally and whatnot, or, you know, physically, because I buy a lot of Blu-rays and DVDs and VHSs. And yes, I still buy VHSs when I find them. But yeah, I've not seen Oppenheimer yet, but I know he's in it. So that right there is a reason for me to watch it. I know everyone focuses on, what, Cillian Murphy? And me, I see David Dastmalchian, and I'm like, I'm in! Which is one of the reasons why I watched this final movie I'm mentioning, The Boogeyman. Which The Boogeyman also starred, and damn it, I can't remember her name at the moment, but she was the little girl who played Princess Leia in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that was on Disney Plus, that so many people bitched about. It was not horrible. It was not one of the better ones, but it wasn't horrible either. There was lots to enjoy from it. And the little girl that played Princess Leia, she was solid. But she's also in The Boogeyman. But getting back to Late Night with the Devil, this movie is David's first lead role. A role he got because the Cairns brothers read his article in Fangoria, Volume 2, Issue Number 11, about local horror hosts. David, in an interview I read with him, apparently he wrote the article like very shortly after his mother passed away. And he goes on to explain, like, when he was growing up, he grew up in somewhat of a religious upbringing, so his family was not too keen on horror films. So how he used to see a lot of them was late night TV with local horror hosts, because he usually had to wait till his mother went to bed or whatever, and then he would sneak in on TV and watch the creature features of the week. So horror hosts became a big thing that he, you know, became very familiar with. Sort of like I talk about on this show about, like, Count Scary from, you know, Detroit. And he was actually Tom Ryan from 104.3, their radio station. He would dress up as this goofy Dracula-like, you know, vampire and, you know, crack these stupid puns and whatnot. But he would host the shows. Another big one, obviously, is Sven Gulli, who's on MeTV every, what, Friday? Is it Friday or Saturday night? I don't know. I'm usually working, so I never get to watch it. But yeah, like, so he wrote this article. For those of you wondering, by the way, the Fangoria issue that the article can be found in is the one with Barbara Crampton. She's on the cover because her movie Jacob's Wife had just, it was either that it had just come out or was just coming out. It's the April 2021 issue from Fangoria, which is out of print on their website. So if you don't have it, unfortunately, you'll have to find other ways to get your hands on the copy. I do actually have it, and I did get to read the article, so it was very interesting. In the article, David also talks about the fact that there's a comic book that he created called Count Crowley, Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter, and it's a book about these adventures of this rising TV journalist known as Jerry Bartman. And what it is she's returned to her small Midwest town, like where she grew up and whatnot, and she gets hired by the station there. She's demoted to hosting the nightly creature features. And so the whole thing is that she finds out that not only is she hosting these creature features and whatnot, but she has a discovery of her own that her new job comes with this, like, secret supernatural duty. So that was mentioned in the article and whatnot. Now, bringing it back to this movie, though, the Cairns brothers, they read his article in the Fangoria issue. They felt he would be the perfect fit for this movie because he had such knowledge of late night TV hosts. And since their film was going to be one of, you know, a darker nature, they thought he could definitely help in aiding the film's attempt at a more sinister direction. So, It's sort of interesting how it all, you know, how it all came into play. And to think, like a lot of why David wrote the article as well for Fangoria was because not only did he lose his mother and it was a very sad and hard time for him. Keep in mind, this was also during the pandemic. So things were a lot different. He couldn't have that connection with people and whatnot because there was so much about social distancing and don't touch and don't hug and don't kiss and don't fuck and all that other stuff. So, I mean, it was a lonely, hard, and sad time for him. And he wrote this article, and the editors of Fangoria just loved it. They put it in the book, and that leads to this. So, it really awesome. Also, I'm going to throw a side note out there. If you can also get your hands on the Horror Hound magazine, issue number 94 from summer 2022. There's a good interview with David about his comic book, Count Crowley, in there as well. The article was done by Jessica Dwyer. It's a nice read as well. And I might also add that David himself has also just kicked off a new podcast show that actually started maybe 5-6 days ago. It's very recent, and it streams exclusively on Instagram. It's known as, the title of it is Grave Conversations. So what it is he brings on a guest each week. Mike Flanagan will be one of the guests. Matthew Lillard will be one of the guests. I love the premise for this podcast because he brings on a guest and they both lay down in coffins, like separate coffins, and they discuss whatever topics come up at the time. It's quite interesting. I haven't had a chance to watch the first episode that's on there yet. I just briefly found out about it. I'm already following it on Instagram because I have to check this out. Which you can follow the show on Instagram at Grave Conversation Show. That's the handle on Instagram. If you follow it there, each week there will be a new episode. Like I said, I know... who was it this week? I think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was Kate Siegel. And then next week is supposed to be Mike Flanagan, and the week after that is supposed to be Matthew Lillard, if I remember correctly. So it looks interesting. Like, I definitely want to check it out myself. So like I said, I'm already following it so I can go back to it. And also, for one final note, I just wanted to add also that one thing that David has done that I've absolutely enjoyed watching him do is since 2021, he has been the host for the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards that air on Shudder, usually roughly around May and June and whatnot. I'm assuming he's doing it again this year, but I haven't seen anything yet. But I'm assuming he probably will. He's hilarious. I really enjoy watching him as a host. So again, that ties back to Late Night with the Devil because he has a knack for hosting shows. So that's pretty much it for now that I'll be talking about David. Obviously, there will be more that I will be bringing up in the future, but I do have to get through the rest of the cast. So we'll move on to Laura Gordon as June Ross Mitchell. She's the parapsychologist. She's also an author, apparently, in this film. She's the one who is with the little girl, and she's brought... you know, the little girl on to the show and whatnot. Anyways, she was also in Saw 5. So that's worth mentioning. The next one is an interesting one. Ian Bliss as Carmichael Haig, who is a former magician turned skeptic. I have more to talk about him later on in the review and whatnot. But so I'm watching this movie, and the whole time he's on the screen, I kept thinking to myself, why does he look familiar? And I just wasn't placing it. So, of course, when the film was done, I do what I always do and IMDb that shit. He played Bane in The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh my God, that's who it was. The whole time I'm watching this movie, I'm like, I can place him, I can even see him, but it was not coming to me. He played Bane in The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. So, and I mean, whether or not you like those sequels, I personally do. I think they're fun for what they are, but it's sort of interesting that in The Matrix movies, he is Bane, but he's sort of possessed by Agent Smith in a way, sort of. I mean, like, obviously in a cyberpunk type of setting and whatnot. And then he's in this movie where it's about a possible possession again, but this time with a little girl, and he's now the skeptic who is trying to debunk the whole thing and whatnot. So I just sort of thought it was kind of interesting and whatnot. The rest of the cast, not a whole lot to report on in terms of things they've done, but they are worth mentioning in this segment. So Faisal Badzi, I believe I'm saying that name completely wrong, but he played Chris Tao. He was the psychic who is talking to like the audience, and he's trying to show that he can have some like spiritual connection with them. And the first family or the first people he talks to, it looks like it fails. But then the second family, like the mother and the daughter, it looks like it is successful. But of course, Carmichael, you know, he thinks, oh, well, you probably talked to them before the show and all this sort of stuff. Anyways, I'll get more into that later. But that's his character. Ingrid Torelli, she plays Lily. Lily Dabo, who is the little girl that is brought on to, you know, Jack Delroy's show to try and help boost the ratings and whatnot. She's the teenage survivor of like some satanic church's mass suicide, and she's harboring a demon inside, one that she has named Mr. Riggles, which is reminiscent of Regan's Captain Howdy in The Exorcist. So that's who she plays. Reese Autery as Gus McConnell. Gus is Jack's sidekick. He's sort of like the Ed McMahon to the Johnny Carson, right? So that's who he's playing. This is pretty much his only major role. Georgina Hague as Madeline Piper. She is Jack's deceased wife. She is someone who she passed away due to a battle with cancer. To note, I thought this was kind of interesting. She was Elsa on the TV show Once Upon a Time. And she's also had roles on the Snowpiercer TV series from 2021. And she was in a couple episodes from the Netflix series Archive 81, which has my attention, but I have not watched yet. Finally, I thought I would mention this because this is kind of cool. Sort of like a John Larroquette moment in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The narrator at the beginning of this movie is Michael Ironside. Booyah! What a pull! Nice. So that's basically it for the cast. On to the synopsis, which I stole straight from Shudder. Basically goes like this. October 31st, 1977. Johnny Carson rival Jack Delroy hosts a syndicated late-night talk show, Night Owls, that has long been a trusted companion to insomniacs around the country. A year after the tragic death of Jack's wife, ratings have plummeted. Desperate to turn his fortunes around, Jack plans a Halloween special like no other, unaware that he is about to unleash evil into the living rooms of America. That happens every day, actually, on just regular news. But anyways, the runtime for the movie is 93 minutes. Some say 92 minutes. 92 and some, so 93 minutes. Rated R for violent content, some gore, and language. In Canada, the movie is rated 14+. The budget was hard to find, but I did read somewhere that this could possibly be the number, that the budget was about $1.5 million. The worldwide gross for the limited theatrical release was $11.1 million. And this segment, we're calling it, Is It Live or Is It Memrex? Deep cuts, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. Holy shit, this movie is awesome. I'm going to start off with that. Because, do you like Ghostwatch? Remember that movie? How about the WNUF Halloween special? Yeah, have any of you watched The Cleansing Hour on Shudder? I felt a bit of that in this as well. Even though The Cleansing Hour is kind of different because it's about streaming online and whatnot. But streaming online in 1977 was watching your television set. So this movie plays as part like faux documentary, part found footage. And I love how they do it because we get to see both the live show that the TV audience would have seen in Halloween of 1977. And then we get to see the behind the scenes. And behind the scenes are all done in black and white also, which is kind of cool. And then the TV show itself. And I like that they also use the 4:3 aspect ratio for the TV like production and whatnot. And then when you go backstage or like into the behind the scenes kind of stuff, it's full screen. But then when it goes back to the TV show, it goes to the 4:3 aspect ratio. I like that. I thought that was kind of cool. We get to see those behind the scenes moments. Moments like when Gus is repeatedly trying to warn people. You are messing with things you do not want to mess with. Like, stop doing this. And nobody's listening to him. You know, the fact that Christou died on his way to the hospital after becoming violently ill on stage and vomiting on Carmichael. Oops, by the way, spoilers. Yes, there will be spoilers, if you haven't figured that out by now. I did warn last week. I did say I watch this movie in advance because I was going to spoil shit. Everyone smokes in this movie. It's kind of like, it's interesting. Like, they just smoke like it's nothing, wherever they are. There's no smoking outside. And please be 10 feet away from all door areas. No, this is the 70s. This movie takes place in 1977. And I gotta say, I think they got the aesthetic down, like, almost perfect to a T. In the 70s, I was between the ages of just spat out of the womb and five. Okay, like, I don't remember the 70s, obviously, that well, but I've seen pictures of me growing up in those late 70s years, and the colors of, like, couches and chairs and stuff like that, they got that right. And, you know, you can go on YouTube and watch old commercials and shit like that. Like, you can see what TV looked like in 1977, and I think they got it, like, pretty close, if not perfect. Not to mention the set of the TV show, like, looks like a TV set would have looked back in 1977. So the research was well done in this movie. The set designers and whatnot, they did their job well. They did it well. But let's bring this all back. Because the movie is only as good as its lead. And David Dastmalchian crushes it. For his first lead role in a movie, he owns it. Him acting as a late night TV talk show host. And I mean, like, he looks absolutely, like, natural in his element. When he was asked in a Nerdist interview about where he got his inspiration for Jack Delroy's character, so it's based on, so this is what he got his inspiration or his basis for how he would present himself in this movie. He got it from an American talk show host known as Don Lane. He was a Chicago native, but his big fame was actually in Australia. Don Lane had moved to Australia, and he had quite a bit of success on their late night TV circuit. And the reason why David, you know, got his inspiration from Don, also because he knew a lot about him, but Don, when he had his show, was very interested in the supernatural. He was interested in psychic abilities and things of that nature. And he would have guests on his show, not to ridicule them, but to give them a chance to raise their spirits, if you will. But no, he would let them show what they believed in, to have a chance to prove themselves. And he didn't seem like he was going out of his way to debunk it. And if anything, he was encouraging it. So David took that and he tried to pull inspiration or, like, you know, to bring that to his performance. And I love how in this movie, and they don't hammer this home, but they hint at it, which is, I like that. I like subtlety. I don't like something that completely bangs me over the head with something or has to give me, like, you know, 50 moments of exposition to prove a point. No, no, no. This movie does this subtly, where it makes you look at Jack Delroy as the hero. He's our protagonist. He's the one we should be cheering for. But he also has a dark side. He's running with those shadow groups, you know, the Grove, the All-Men Club, you know, that they do rituals and sacrifices, and that's what helped build his career up. That's what helped make him successful. And they hint at it, not excessively, but just enough. The Grove itself was inspired by the real-life Bohemian Grove Club, a club that apparently was made up of like political figures and name brand individuals. Ambrose Bierce, something like that. He was the author of the Devil's Dictionary. I remember reading that. Anyways, he was one of its founding members. And the Bohemian Grove had been linked to possibly occult rituals. So anyways, they took that real life group and they used it as the basis for the Grove in this movie that, you know, our good friend here, Jack, is a member of this type of group. Which could have led to my next point. What was the sacrifice he gave up? Because we have this fact in this movie. This is Jack. This is his character, right? He's a grieving man. The later part of the film, that's something to keep in mind. He's a grieving man who's lost his wife to cancer. Which, okay, he goes on sabbatical from the show for a while. Basically goes into hiding, which I can almost relate to that, except my wife didn't die. No one wants to marry me, so. Anyway, no, but hey, I think it's Winona Ryder who, you know, she said the reason why she never married was because she'd rather live her life knowing that she never married instead of being someone who had been divorced or something like that. I don't know. I like the way she thinks, though. I'm pretty sure it's Winona Ryder who said that. But anyways, that's a complete side note. Anyways, so Jack having these guests on his show for a Halloween special and whatnot, you sort of wonder if there was, like, hope to connect with something on the other side. You know what I mean? And this movie does lead you to think that that could have possibly been some of the basis for that. But because he's part of the Grove, I always did wonder, like, did his wife, did she die because she was the sacrifice he gave up for his successful career? But then he's quite the grieving man. So at the same time, it's like, I don't know for sure that that was the case because he seemed almost lost without his wife once she was gone. And she was the one that, you know, supported him fully in making him this successful talk show host. So it's very interesting. And but again, that's one thing that this movie does. Now, some people might complain about this because they might say, well, there's nothing definitive. The movie's not telling me everything I need to know. I kind of like that we're left to our own devices at the same time and we can sort of create it in our own minds what we think is going on. But, I mean, I don't know. Because, like, in the movie, so moving forward in the movie, we have the, you know, Jack decides after some time away, he's going to come back and he's going to try and win TV sweeps and take the top mantle away from his rival, Johnny Carson. And TV sweeps is apparently happening during the week of Halloween. Which is weird because if I remember correctly, I always thought sweeps on TV was in the spring when a lot of shows came back from their winter breaks. That's what I always thought. But in this movie, for this story and whatever, it's happening during Halloween, which I'm not complaining about. It just seemed weird because when they mentioned that in the movie and I'm like, but sweeps is in the spring, I always thought. But anyways, Jack, he wants to win this, so he's going to put on a spooktacular show by bringing on a girl who has supposedly been possessed by a demon and can allegedly control it? That was interesting, too. I was like, wait, what? Like, that remains to be seen, because, like, and that the whole parapsychologist, like, she believes, like, she's actually helped the little girl control it. But at the same time, it's always funny to note that, like the woman is, she's apparently an old friend of Jack's, first off. Possibly they're romantically linked. But she sort of plays this moral high ground, like, oh, I don't want to overexpose the child and blah, blah, blah. But meanwhile, you came on the show. So you're sort of hypocritical, whatever. But it wasn't even like, okay, David owns this movie. That role was okay, but the other two that I really had to tip my hat to in this movie was Ian Bliss and Ingrid Torelli, like Carmichael and Lily. Ian, first off, he looked like he was having a blast being a complete pain in the arse. And Ingrid, she does actually a very good job playing like that almost innocent looking girl who is definitely harboring a darkness, you know, deep within and whatnot. It's really interesting. The Carmichael character. So apparently he was based on a real life individual known as James Randi. I guess Randi was some like magician way back in the day or whatever. He became he was very famous as a magician, and then he turned from magician to like psychic debunker, basically. Started his own institute, institute as well, his own facilities, his own office, whatever. They offered like rewards for anyone who could prove their paranormal powers were real. And supposedly he never gave any money away because no one could ever actually prove this. So that's what the Carmichael character is based on in this movie. You have your show, you have your panel of guests, you know, Christow is on there, and you have Carmichael comes out, Christow pukes all over Carmichael, and then after Carmichael out comes the parapsychologist and Lily, and, you know, things start to happen, sparks start to fly, tempers start to boil, but it's also, the movie feels like it's doing it at an unnervingly slow pace. But it's also not. Because here's the thing about this movie is like, you're watching it and you're sort of like, all right, okay. You can feel the mood getting ever so slightly creepier as the movie goes on, but it feels like it's almost going so slow. And then all of a sudden, boom, you are in for the most batshit crazy ending. One that you will wonder, like, what the fuck just happened? Like, I remember watching this movie myself, and I was totally pulled into the whole movie. I loved everything. But I was sitting there going, okay, where does it get good? Where does it get good? And then all of a sudden, boom, out of fucking nowhere, the whole ending just unravels in my face. And then the movie's over. And I was like, wow, 93-minute runtime? For a slow-paced burn at the same time, increasingly gets more haunting, funny at times, but sometimes not intentionally, but it was sort of, you'd still chuckle, and then all of a sudden, boom, it was like, there was the ending. And for this movie, there's not a whole lot of special effects, but when the effects are brought to the film, which is primarily the third act, that's when you see most of the special effects. They're done extremely well. So it's sort of, I mean, it's kind of campy too, but it felt necessary to be campy, like, or cheesy. Like, it's okay though. Like, it sort of works. The hypnotist scene is actually very well done. Worms, yummy. Does anyone remember the book, How to Eat Fried Worms? Yeah. My next point, there's something with this film that I do have to talk about, and this next point makes me want to feed some people worms. Because if you've read anything on the internet about this movie, you are probably aware of some little controversy. How to tackle this one. And the funny thing is you would think like the controversy would be like, you know, some like satanic panic kind of thing or something like that. No. The supposed controversy of AI, artificial intelligence, and its use in this movie. Where did it all start? The controversy all started with a fucking Variety magazine article, who apparently were having a slow news day, because this was Variety's great idea. Let's go to Letterboxd. You know that site? I actually have an account on there as well. Sometimes I've done the odd review on there, but it's Letterboxd, okay? Anyways, March 19th, 2024, there's a review on there from some cool guy named Based Gizmo, who whined, as you do on the internet, claiming that the use of AI in the movie was the reason, quote unquote, I can't enjoy the amazing performances and clever ending. And Variety wrote about it because that's what you do when you're Variety.com. So because of this review from Based Gizmo, other users on the site started chiming in and acting holier than thou, claiming how horrible it was. Oh, how this movie should be boycotted, canceled, blah, blah, blah. And of course, as you do in the domino effect, it found its way to Elon's Hell app, a.k.a. Twixer, Twitter, X, Twixer. I call it Twixer now. Let's take the two T's out and put some X's in there. Anyways, the cancel culture that exists on that shitty app, they decided they wanted to join in and have fun and destroy this movie, as you do when you are on Twixer. Because we can't have nice things, right? So to follow up on it, the two brothers, Cameron and Colin, they explained what they used the AI for. They didn't duck it. They didn't say, no, it wasn't true. No, they said, this is what we used it for, people. We used it for three still images that are used as the interstitials during the broadcast. But what people keep glossing over is the fact that, okay, yes, AI created the original images. But then their art department for the film took those AI images and they worked on them as well. So they edited them, changed them to the way they thought it should look. And those final products that were used between AI and the art department team were used for a few small seconds of the movie. This is what people were complaining about on the internet. So how I'm going to approach this is it right or wrong to use AI in film? Honestly, I'm not of authority to answer that. I don't make films. I consume them. And I don't know. Honestly, most people didn't even know this was a fucking thing in the movie until Based Gizmo came along. I didn't even notice it, honestly. I found out about it after the fact. I had already watched the movie. I'd already enjoyed the fuck out of it. And then I find out this is on the internet. Because here we are again with some useless asshole trying to be holier than thou on the internet, trying to sound like they are standing on some moral high ground. And for what? So you can shit on a movie that has high praise? So you can tear it down? Like, the world needs to unfuck itself. Honestly, stop being so fucking uptight about everything. And let the right people say what they feel should be said about this. David Dastmalchian, lead actor of the film, supported the Cairns brothers and the art department for doing it the way they did. He didn't have a problem with it. None of the actors did. Nobody in this film had a problem with it. Based Gizmo had a problem with it. Who can't? And this person can't even use their real name. Let's hide behind a computer and act like they've been wrong to the highest level. You know what? Sit down and shut up. I get people react for whatever reasons, and if you have an opinion, then fine, have it. We're all free to have our opinions, but don't act like three little images in a movie had your panties in a wadded knot when I'm sure you yourself, asshole, have probably shared memes, pictures, music, movies, etc., etc. yourself at one point or another in your life. Don't act like you are so perfect. For all the hard work that everyone put into making this movie, I'd rather focus on that and applaud this movie for feeling original and different in a film market that seems to have been lacking for quite some time. That's my say on it. I am not in any authority whatsoever to talk about whether AI should be used in film or not. And when we're honestly bitching about three fucking pictures, it didn't harm any actor whatsoever. If you want to talk about, oh, it harmed artists, whatever. The art department team themselves took those images and then worked on them further. So you still had people working on them after. They just wanted an initial frame to work from. That's all it was. But yes, let's make some big fucking deal. And thanks to Variety, who had nothing better to do with their fucking time, all of a sudden this became a thing. I'd rather focus on all the hard work that was put into this movie, which is what I've been doing up until I had to talk about this part. Because, I mean, like, again, the 70s aesthetic works very well in this. In a small way, it actually almost plays like a cast character in its own right. That time period, talk shows. The talk shows in the 70s, and then even into the 80s, had like a dangerous mystique to them, especially to younger audiences. Felt like, ooh, I'm watching this adult show and adult things are being spoken about. Was it David Letterman? I think. Maybe it was Johnny Carson. It was one or the other, where both Vincent Price and Elvira were on at the same time. And you could tell Vincent Price was extremely horny for Elvira. It was kind of interesting. You can find the clip on YouTube. I've watched it several times. It's funny. But yeah, like talk shows, that was what they did. They had like that dangerous mystique to them and whatnot. And that's what this movie sort of hints at, you know? In terms of, now here's one thing. So when I talked about Infested, I said how the score was like phenomenal. This movie has a decent score, but there's not a lot of it. So it's not memorable because you're more focused on the music because of the music that came from the show. You know, the production of Night Owls. There's not a whole lot in terms of quote-unquote score in this film. So it's there, but it's not memorable. And there's, okay, as much as I fucking love this movie, there is one thing that irks me. One little problem I had with it, and that was the red herring with the guy in the audience wearing the skull mask. It looks like a Halloween 3 mask. As a matter of fact, he's dressed up as a whole skeleton, but the mask itself looks like, you know, the one that Tom Atkins has at the end, you know, has put on his head and whatnot. That one. Silver Shamrock. Yeah, he looks like he's wearing a Silver Shamrock mask. I wanted there to be something up with that guy. When I was watching it, like, okay, I mean, at the same time, because my brain is scattered all over this point, I guess some people would also say it makes the movie predictable or cliche, but I don't know. I kept hoping for there to be something with, like, that guy connected to him. Maybe that Christow's death was in some way or another linked to that character. Or that maybe, like, you found out, like, the mask would come off and it was actually, like, Jack's dead wife or something. Like, I wanted something to be with that, and it was just a red herring that they kept focusing in on this guy sitting in the crowd looking completely ominous as this skeleton, and there was nothing. It was like, we halfway through the movie, they already forgot about him and we never panned back to him again. And that sort of bothered me. But I mean, even with that one gripe, it's not enough to make me not love this movie. And I've stated it several times. I'm going to say it one more time. It's David why you watch this. He is mesmerizing in his performance. And on top of the fact that it's a Halloween movie.
I mean,
somewhat. It takes place at Halloween. Does it make it a Halloween movie? Well, it'll be a Halloween tradition for me, that's for sure. IMDb has the movie standing at, listen to this, kids. This is rare. The movie is standing at a 7.1 out of 10. Nice. It is. I know some people would say, well, that's still kind of low. Not really. For a horror film and a low budget horror film at that, that was primarily shown at film festivals, that's pretty damn good. Rotten Tomatoes, the RT, usually the site that I can't stand, but right now, currently, it's holding firm at a 91% favorable rating, with the average rating being 7.9 out of 10. It's actually even higher rated than IMDb. That's pretty damn good. The website's consensus read, I wrote this down, delightfully dark. Late night with the devil proves possession horror isn't played out and serves as an outstanding showcase for David Dastmalchian. And one more, I can't even call him a critic, but one more comment that was made about this movie came from the King himself. Yes, Stephen King. So before the movie came out, Stephen King was provided with an advance screener edition of the film. And after watching the movie, he tweeted this. It's absolutely brilliant. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. Your results may vary, as they say, but I urge you to watch it when you can. Now, here's the interesting thing, because so many people will always say, oh, Stephen King blows himself over every movie and blah, 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 and this and that. Especially when it's a movie that is based on one of his stories, and people will be like, oh, he probably just said it's good because it's his story, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. But it's interesting how Stephen King spoke up about this movie, and all of a sudden, people wanted to check it out. They wanted to see, was it really as good as he's claiming? So that definitely helped propel some of the interest into this film. Which, okay. Podcast zero rating. I like this movie. I like David Dastmalchian. I've been following his career for a while. I like a lot of what I see from him. But even aside from it being him, I would honestly have watched Night Owls with Jack Del Roy if it had been a real show. Honestly, like, it looked like a fun show. And I know I already said it, but, like, I mean, I like this movie. It's a movie that's sort of in the same vein as previous outings, like Ghostwatch, WNUF Halloween special. This one hits that spot. I know some people feel the pacing is a bit slow. I did see that said in a few comments, but I think it goes at just the right pace. Honestly, it feels like watching a talk show. If you've ever watched any late night talk shows, you have your talk show host comes out, does their monologue, kind of like I do on this show. I've sort of always fashioned my show to be like a talk show host. And they come out and do their monologue, and then they have their first guest, and then they have their second guest, and then they have their third guest. The third guest sometimes is, you know, performing artist of the night, you know. Late Night with David Letterman, and now the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And they always save that for last. You know what I mean? Because why? Because usually the artist they're going to have on there is why you tuned in for the show. So they make you go through the other stuff first, so you get the headliner at the end. And that's what this show does. They put the headliner at the end of the show. I love the look of the movie. I love how it's almost a found footage movie, but not done in that annoying shaky cam and unscripted dialogue, like, I don't have the map kind of way. I feel like actual care was put into making this movie. It's not groundbreaking. Yeah, it really, when you actually think about this movie, it doesn't do anything we haven't seen before. but it does it in a way that makes it feel like a fresh experience, which is something we don't encounter often these days. I love the performances, but not just David Dastmalchian. Yes, he's your highlight, but Ian Bliss and Ingrid Torelli as well. Which I honestly haven't even talked much about Ingrid. Like, she does a really good job with her role. She's a young actress. I believe, if I remember correctly, she was like 11 or 12. Maybe. Somewhere around there. And she does a good job with it. Like, she's almost channeling, like, Carrie White or Regan McNeil, you know, with that twist of Pazuzu or Azrael, you know, to highlight the darker moments. Like, and her conviction to the character seemed convincing. I didn't feel like I was watching someone who was, like, just reading lines. Like, she's strange, she's odd, almost innocent. I mean, I know what I was watching was a fictional movie, and I'm well aware of this. My brain knows how to function on that level. But for a younger actress, like, I felt the performance was legitimate. All in all, Late Night with the Devil, the cast, the sets, the contrast of color versus black and white, the shorter runtime, the performances. I can't say enough good things about this movie, with the exception of my tiny little gripe about the red herring. This movie is 9 out of 10. It is phenomenal. It is an excellent film. Might end up being, I know we still have a long way to go this year, but this might be my movie of the year. I wanted to give it a 10. I should give it a 10 out of 10. But like I said, the bit with the skeleton guy, I was like, do something with that. And they didn't. And I was like, ah, oh. I just felt a little let down by that. But other than that, like, everything I got in this was exactly what I wanted. And wasn't what I expected at the same time. Like I said, the ending is batshit crazy. And I was like, what the fuck did I just watch? it was great. It was awesome. It was exactly what I wanted without knowing I wanted it. And on that note, I feel it's time to say goodbye and thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode, one that I couldn't wait to do. Like I told you on last week's episode, like, I came home April 19th that morning after working a midnight shift. I came home, took a shower, made chicken strips. I know I've already talked about the whole mustard thing and whatnot, but I dove right into this movie. This was the one I had been waiting for a while, and I couldn't have been happier with what we got. Like, it was just wonderful. I know that there's also, and I haven't watched it yet, so I can't comment on it, but Shudder did announce on social media that there is a follow-up to this movie on YouTube. If you guys can follow, if you can find the post from Shudder, they direct you to a YouTube video, and it's supposed to be that it's like a follow-up to that night on, like, it's like, I'm assuming, from what I understand, like I said, I haven't watched it yet, which is probably bad on me, but sometimes I just don't get time to do everything I want to do. I think it takes place like on November 1st of 1977. It's like the following night or something to that effect. I could be way off. I could be wrong. But I do know that there is a video on the Shudder account for... Well, actually, just do that. Go on YouTube and look up the Shudder account. And it's on there. It's a half hour video or something like that that ties in with this. Which I'm assuming which most Shudder films do get physical releases, will probably be an extra on the Blu-ray when it's released a year from now. So, which, will I be buying it? Abso-fucking-lutely. I love this. I love everything about Late Night with the Devil. It was definitely one that I could not wait to see. And I... what was the real selling point for me was knowing that David Dastmalchian was the headliner. He was the one playing Jack Del Roy, and it's like, I know how well he can act. I can't wait to see him finally get his limelight, his center stage. And he took it, and he hit a fucking home run with it, and bravo on that. So, again, thanks for listening to this week's episode. I do want to ask a favor of all of you, if I could, if I may, is possibly, if you haven't already, some of you may have already, and I may be asking, you know, and you're like, well, I already did that, which in that case, I thank you very much already, but maybe, like, please rate and review the podcast. You don't have to, like, you know, like and subscribe, but no, honestly, actually, it would help. Some of my episodes I do notice get, like, quite a bit of traction, and then some of them don't. And maybe, like, giving a small rating and review on, like, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever app you use, it might help to generate more traction to the show, possibly, if you want to. If you don't, hey, I'm not that guy that's like, you must do this or you're not a fan. Like, I don't believe in gatekeeping like that. I just thought I would ask. Just thought I'd put it out there. Like I put this show out there. You know what I mean? I scratch your back, you scratch mine. No, all right, whatever. Anyways, you guys know you can find the show, like I said, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, CastBox. I don't know. Sometimes I like to, just for shits and giggles, I go on the app stores on my phones and whatnot, and I like to see how many podcast apps there are. There's like, fuck, there's almost like 24 of them. If not more. That's just what I see in my initial search. But, I mean, there's a lot of them. Everything from Podbean to... Podcast Addict, that's another one. And the show apparently is on, like, all of these apps. So that's pretty cool. It's on Stitcher, apparently, as well. Or is it Pandora or whatever? I don't know. Like I said, there's so many of them. I was like, damn. it's kind of... weird. But anyways, yeah, so you can find the show there, or, you know, the red circle links. When I post this on social media, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, or the Slasher app, I do always put, like, a link, and, like, some of, like, for example, on Instagram, I do the stories thing a lot, and I'll, like, have, like, you know, a link in the story, and I'll have the little icon that shows click here. If you want to do it that way, it's a direct link to the episode itself, skips all the apps and whatnot, so you can straight download the episode if you want or whatever. Like, there's many ways that you can access this show, and I do know people are accessing it, so thank you for tuning in and whatnot. If you want to get a hold of me, or you don't, you just want to follow quietly, which I am that guy. I follow quietly. I don't do a whole lot of interacting on social media. Facebook.com/WhatLurksBehindPodcastZero. On Instagram, @WhatLurksBehindPodcastZero. The Slasher app, if you use that, the show is on there as well. Again, I am that quiet guy. I don't talk a whole lot. I just sort of like things and I admire from a distance. So if you're that kind of person, I don't have a problem with it. Don't feel like you have to interact. Or if you want to do things very privately, you can always email at, you can email me at whatlurksbehindpodcastzero@gmail.com. If you are that kind of person, or like some of you who know me personally, I really do appreciate when I get feedback and I'll have people come up and tell me that they enjoyed the show. I'm that weird, awkward guy that sometimes doesn't know how to take compliments, but it does mean a lot. So I appreciate some of the private messages I get, people coming up to me and saying, hey, listen to your show, it was really good. I do actually really appreciate it. I'm just not really good with interactions. I am definitely that awkward fucking weirdo that I do not, which is going to be weird. To finish my thought, I am that awkward guy that doesn't know how to interact. But this coming weekend is Shockstock in London, Ontario. I will be there, going there to meet. Well, I've met Joe Bob Briggs before. I met him 5 years ago. I think I actually talked about it on this show. So that's happened. But this year, Darcy the mail girl will be there. So I get to finally meet Darcy. And I'm really excited about that. And Bill Moseley is going to be there. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, at the same time, I am totally an awkward fan that I don't know. I am horrible at interacting with people, so I don't know how this is going to go. But, yeah. That's coming. Excuse me. That will be talked about on next episode, which, now using that as my segue, it's a little film. A little film from 1990. And the director, more known for his macabre creations of splatter and gore than maybe his directing. But this is a movie based on an original film from 1968. 22 years after the original shocked the world with its anxiety-inducing visuals, Tom Savini gave us a fresh new look at the George Romero classic when he remade Night of the Living Dead. That will be the next episode. Episode 142 will be the 1990 flick Night of the Living Dead, which I feel is a very topical conversation or discussion, or like, it's something to be talked about. It's very relevant because there is so much talk about remakes, reboots, prequels, requels, whatever other fucking word people are thinking of these days. But a lot of that is in the forefront of discussions these days. And I thought, I want to talk about a remake. And then I was actually trying to figure out which one, and then I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. Like, 1990, Night of the Living Dead, Tom Savini remaking George Romero's absolutely epic classic. Like, what better movie to talk about? So, that will be the next episode. That's pretty much it. I think I've talked enough.
Coming up, it's television's spookiest night in a special Halloween edition of Night Owls with Jack Delroy. Tonight, medium and psychic Christu demonstrates how he speaks to the dead.
You hear these voices of the dead all the time. I guess the burning question is, how the hell do you get any sleep?
Hypnotist Carmichael Haig puts the audience and yours truly in a spine-chilling trance. Then parapsychologist June Ross Mitchell introduces us to Lily, the subject of her book, Conversations with the Devil. Don't miss the television event of the year, tonight on Night Owls with Jack Delroy.
Okay, bye.